On this episode, we discuss Countdown.
So you guys remember in the movie Suicide Squad where Slipknot got his head exploded because Flag used his little thing and he like hit a button on his phone and it blew off Slipknot's head, and then Harley Quinn's like, wow, that's a killer app. Well, what she was really talking about is the movie we watched today, Countdown, a movie about a killer app.
Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
This is a show that you know that much so far.
Yeah.
You're already familiar with the premise
of it being a show of some kind. Great. Yeah. We're working from first principles, a priori. It's a show. Let's keep building from there. I love it. This philosophical
now,
way of building the show logically.
There's two parts to a show. There's the performers and the audience. The audience is you listening to us, and we're the performers, the three of us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Dan, okay. Stuart, and Elliot, the members of the Flophouse. This is
now,
a podcast.
Marcel Duchamp, in his essay, The Role of the Spectator in Art, would say that you, the audience, have an equal part to play in this process. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you don't, because we can't hear you.
Yeah. Anyway, so we talk about bad movies on
except
this
for when you like tweeted us after the show, and we're like, oh, that's a really interesting thing you thought of.
And that's a good point. We will pretend to be interested.
Wow. During
just, I was totally JK, serious.
JK, it's genuine interest. G.I. Joe, genuine interest Joe. That's when G.I. Joe nods and goes, oh, that's interesting. He means it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's an active listener. During the month of October, or Shocktober, as we call it here at the Flophouse, and no one else ever does.
Too, at the Flophouse, too, our podcast about birds.
It's also about applying fake grass to miniature dioramas.
that's the two things that the Flophouse talks about.
So we watch horror movies during the spooky season, Shocktober. We watched Countdown from 2019 this time around. Guys, I was surprised to learn, looking at the Wikipedia page, that Countdown was a major return on investment. It was a hit. It cost like $6.5 million and made something like 40-something million.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page now. It says $48 million. Now, again, we don't know how much marketing and publicity cost. You have to assume that that's at least the budget again, usually. But for a movie like this, I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, well, I don't recall there being
you don't remember seeing all the Subway ads and the Burger King kids meal? And
saw it in spite of all the bad reviews that it got
now,
at the time.
Now, according to the trivia on IMDb, apparently we did a lot more research for this than we usually do. Mm-hmm. The trivia says the app featured in the film actually exists. It is owned by the studio and was used to promote the film. So you got to assume a lot of money went into the research and development of an app that actually can tell you with exact prediction the second you're going to die.
I mean, you cut out the middleman by just involving a demon in the process, but I think I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, you go to one of those Russian demon farms where they just have demons mining Bitcoin hour after
now,
hour.
Now, one could argue that all tech companies are kind of demons and they're bad. Mm. But I mean, sure. I don't want to make that argument right now because you might be listening to this podcast using one of those tech companies' products.
Yeah, the Twitter bird might be listening to this and going, "Well, I never tweet tweet. Let me go amplify some misinformation and then put a tiny widget at the bottom. And that makes me feel like I did my job." Now, here's the thing. I once sent an email and instead of going
option to report people who are being horrible, but then do nothing about it.
You could choose not to. I once sent an email to someone, and instead of going to the person I meant it to go to, it went to a mailer demon. And I was like, and I had to get my computer exercised, which of course means getting a gym membership. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was a long story. So, Stuart, why don't you tell us about this movie Countdown?
Okay, well, we're off to an auspicious start because there's not that many production logos.
Woo!
Mm-hmm. It was at this point, I'm like, I usually, when I'm doing the summaries, just to pull back the curtain, I usually kick back my heels, chill, drink a cup of coffee, because I know there's like 50 production logos. I can do whatever the fuck I want. That's me time. Unfortunately, I had no me time. I had to watch the movie.
So you were scrambling to get to your pad and pen going, oh, shit.
Yes, yeah. Dust off my typewriter real quick. So the movie opens on a house party filled with teens/college students. Our hero group of teens are sitting around the table playing playing a drinking game.
Well, are they?
I don't know if I would call them our hero group.
We're not going to see again for the most part.
These are roughly the Drew Barrymore and Scream of characters for this movie.
Mm-hmm. So they're playing a drinking game, but they quickly get distracted, like teens do, by talking about social media and other apps. They accidentally stumble on this app, Countdown, looking for a weight loss app.
Yeah, instead, they find counting.
Countdown, which very impressive that that this app managed to get in there and get the name Countdown locked down.
I'm gonna say this a surprising amount during this this episode. I think I liked the way the movie handled this. Like, I thought this was pretty efficient. That they were just like. Let's all agree that an app that counts down to when you die as a horror movie premise is maybe, I wouldn't say it's inherently a bad idea because all ideas can work, but knowing the history of internet-based horror, I had
there's a lot of
not yeah, fear.com.
There's a lot of speed bumps on the road. I mean, because once you introduce it, you're also like, who made it and who the Apple Store like approved it?
Yes.
Like, and also
it's got 3.6 stars, which is madness.
I loved
that's the
that
craziest
detail.
Part.
I love that. I thought that was so hilarious.
Because it's like pretty, a lot of people like it, but there's a few people that are like, I die.
There's some people who are like, demon came and killed me when I tried to save my life.
The thing.
One star.
That the people who died didn't rate the thing.
So it's like my brother downloaded this app and died.
Yeah,
that, like, kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But
and then other people,
when the app tells you you've got 70 more years to live, then you're like five stars.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is the exact, like, someone pointed this out. I think I might be stealing something from someone's Letterboxd review, but so I apologize.
You did do research on this. Wow.
But I love that, like, 3.6 stars. I feel like is the exact number where you're like, okay, I'll still download this. Any lower, it's probably going to do something to my phone. But
yeah, there's something
sure,
wrong with
this countdown. But I just wanted to say, like, I think it's good that, like, it jumped into this. Because otherwise, setting up the idea that all these people are going to download this app, I don't know. I'm not necessarily – there's a lot of ways to go about it that I'm not going to really buy. But the idea that they're just, like, at a party, they're looking for another app. They see this app, and they're like, yeah, sure, we can make a dumb drinking game out of this. Let's do this.
Which,
I'm like, okay, let's do it.
I've definitely – I remember a night at the bar where, like, a bunch of the regulars and I all just downloaded CoStar and matched and then compared our astrology charts to each other because there's nothing else to do except drink.
Yeah, okay. And do you remember, speaking of drinking and apps, that – years ago, someone made a lot of money off of an app you had to pay for, and all it did was it looked like the screen on your phone was filled with beer, and then when you tilted it, it looked like it was pouring on the screen. That's all it did. I think it cost $2, and I remember having many friends that paid to have that.
Yeah.
So I totally believe that for free. The hard needle to thread for this movie. You get the cliche
we get
that
it.
For.
We got you.
We won't make fun of you for a
thank you. It's the kind of gray area between people downloading it as a lark and treating it as a joke, but also kind of treating it as real, which I guess fits into teen life where things are both a joke and not. But it's kind
all about
of like,
irony, you know?
I feel like people would download it and they'd be like, huh. 60 years, pretty sweet. But then they would immediately ingest that as that is the amount of time that I'm living. You know, they wouldn't, nobody ever, they downloaded it as a joke, but everyone kind of took it as real right off the bat, you know, to greater or lesser degree.
And we're going to, like, we're kind of getting into the meat of this app thing, but part of it is that the joke is that nobody reads the user agreement, which makes sense. And then, but part of the user agreement is if you change your life decisions in any way based on this information, you break the user agreement and a demon kills you. And the thing that's wild is that we only deal with people that are like, I'm dying soon. I'm just going to break these plans, as opposed to people that are like, I'm going to live 70 years. I'm just going to go hog wild.
Yeah.
And they're like,
you know
wait.
What? That's true. There's a whole flip side of this that we never see. Like, that would be a good idea. Like, you're breaking the user agreement. You're like, oh, I'm going to live till I'm 90.
Uh-huh.
Fuck it. I'm, buck wild now, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, the
no
app
seat belts.
Only, as we see later on, the app is so intent on enforcing that countdown, the specific countdown, that it means that this busy demon would be constantly, like, doing stuff to save your life constantly.
Yeah.
I gotta follow him around all the time and make sure that he lives to be 90 years old.
It's very funny.
This is a huge
baby stay-out situation.
I mean, that is, to be honest, that's a premise I would really love if someone's like, fuck it. I'm going to live like I'm never wearing a condom again. I'm eating nothing but garbage. I'm going to throw myself out of windows. And the demon is like, oh, God, I gotta work so hard to keep this guy alive.
Yeah. Okay, so our heroine, Courtney, reluctantly downloads the app. She finds out she only has two scenes
in the movie.
She finds out she only has 3 hours to live, so her boyfriend, Evan, decides to get super drunk and drive her home. And she's like, no, I'm going to die. And he's like, get out of here. And he drives off drunk. She then gets a notification from the app that she has broken the user agreement and only has 7 minutes to live. So she walks home. There's a few jump scares. App keeps making spooky sounds, which is a great feature. The UI of this app is incredible.
It just constantly
I do love also that everyone is like, I don't know about you, but like, who leaves the notifications on? Every time an app's like, can we send you notifications? I'm like, no. Warhammer Army-less making app. You don't need to send me fucking notifications.
I mean, based on the fact that the app doesn't let you delete it later on, I'm pretty sure that the app
is a demonic app. Yeah, I don't think it's really paying attention to your preferences.
Whatever.
Limited options to customize.
Okay, I will only give it 3 stars then. She then... goes home to a dark house, and then she gets yanked up.
We can assume it's her house.
Yeah, I'm assuming. Thank you for clarifying. The listeners were probably like, she just went into some strange dark house?
Well, it is funny because, like, the guy was about to drive her drunk home, and based on this walk, it feels like she lives maybe 2 blocks away. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I understand that in other parts of the country, especially if you have your car with you, you would drive those 2 blocks.
Welcome to L.A., Dan.
But the degree to which her boyfriend is like, no, I'm driving drunk is absurd to me.
It's my right as an American to use gasoline for all movement of any kind outside of buildings.
So she is in the bathroom. There's a few scares, and then she gets yanked up in the air by some invisible force and like smashed, and then her broken body is smashed against the floor right when she was supposed to die. And then we cut
five stars to that app.
And then before the end of this cold open,
she has just at 1 moment left of consciousness to tap the 5-star rating on the app and type out very accurate.
But before the end of the cold open here, we see that her drunk boyfriend did crash his car and that she would have died, that like wood went right through her chair. How does that tie in together? Okay, cut to a hospital where that same boyfriend, Evan, is preparing for a surgery. And he is he's scared that he's going to die during surgery because he had also downloaded the app. And it says basically that he's going to die when the surgery's scheduled.
Yeah.
He doesn't like this information.
Unless a safe is going to fall through the ceiling and crush him on his way to the OR, he's going to die on the table. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he complains about this to Quinn, the real hero of the movie, played by Beck from You, the first season of You.
The first season's love interest.
And now, you could call Quinn a medicine woman, couldn't you?
That's true. Oh, I did the whole time. I guess I'll just delete that from every instance in my notes.
Because she's a nurse. She's a nurse at the hospital. Yeah.
Well, in fact, she just passed her test. She's officially a nurse, so they throw her a party. All the other nurses are talking about this cool countdown app. So she downloads this fucking app, and it says she only has 3 days to live. That ain't good. Mm. And then a doctor played by Peter Facinelli gets super handsy with her, and you're like, what the fuck? He makes a pass at her, and she's like, no thanks. Okay, so then Quinn has to go to her childhood home.
I mean, he does more than make a pass at him. She says more than no thanks.
I want to make it clear. I'm not laughing at the idea of harassment. I'm laughing at the idea that she's just like, no thanks. It's more, he's more handsy and
it's a real pressure and assault situation.
Well, initially it's a thing where he is testing the waters. He's like handsy, but he hasn't completely assaulted her yet. Yes. That obviously happens later. And it's
horrible. He's being inappropriate, but he is not yet being threatening.
Yeah.
Or violent, you know. Okay. That comes later.
So she needs to fill out her I-9. this is great because I'm like, man, this is exactly the kind of shit I have to deal with.
It's also like, so she didn't have to fill it out before because she was like a resident student or what was going on?
But also, Audrey, who works in payroll, points out that like, this is, like, all a weird excuse for the movie to get her to go back home to get her birth certificate. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you don't need that.
No, it's so funny. The idea that, well, because she doesn't want to be near her family, I guess, but it really is creating a very big reason for her to just go to see her family who live in the same town that she does.
Yeah.
So she has to go to her childhood home to get that birth certificate. While she's home,
she never does too. So all the scenes afterwards, as far as I know, all the scenes afterwards where she's working, she's there illegally. Yeah, well,
later on when she has that HR meeting, I'm like, this is probably about the I-9.
They're paying her under the table. It's one of those.
Yeah, she never proves she's a permanent resident of the United States.
So she interrupts her sister Jordan from having a romantic tryst with a boy Joe, who is shirtless. But they kick him out, and then they get in a fight. They clearly have a strained relationship resulting from the death of their mother. And their father is like, hey, we're going to go put flowers on your mom's grave on Saturday. And she's like, okay, let's do it. Don't worry. She's going to but you don't know if she's going to be alive.
Those flowers were for Algernon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, they exactly.
They have a big fight about it.
Uh-huh. Do you think florists have to deal with a lot of that joke?
I don't know. I think they have to deal with it a lot. I would say that is probably a joke that has been made at some point.
Okay.
Although is buying?
I'm guessing not recently, not lately.
Just to have that done.
I feel like if the florist sees that a middle school English teacher is walking into the place, then maybe they get a little worried that the joke's coming.
Buckle
up.
Yeah. Steal yourself.
Now, did it seem to you like their dad was very young?
I guess. I mean. Yeah.
Or is it just that movies have made it impossible for me to tell how old people are?
I think it's that we're all aging, and so people look young to us now.
No, but it's true. Like, I saw Timothy Oliphant and Johnny Knoxville both on Seth Meyers recently, and both of them, their fucking faces are so smooth. Like, they look, they're very sexy men, but I gotta tell you.
I don't know.
I wouldn't call either of those faces smooth. But like,
watch this episode of Seth Meyers. Maybe there's a digital artist going in there and cleaning that shit up.
Timothy Oliphant, I think, is an extremely handsome man.
Yeah.
Like, very, very handsome. Johnny Knoxville's also a handsome man, very, a lot of character, but both of them have, like, that's what I would say, they have character in their face. Johnny Knoxville in particular has, like,
well, I've been watching Reboot, and Johnny Knoxville's on that, and I've been thinking that he actually looks quite old and craggy to me. So.
Okay, well, you guys go back and watch. I guess there's a plug for an episode of Late Night with Seth Meyers and see him. For whatever reason, their faces look much smoother than I expected them to look, and it threw me off because I'm like, hey, guys, you guys look great. Just age naturally, whatever. But maybe they're trying to still play teenagers.
I think they were trying to do a new thing where the camera is watching the show through the app that sees what you would look like as a baby.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Little baby face app. Okay, so yeah, of course, she makes the plans with her dad, and you're like, is she even going to be alive? But don't worry, like three scenes later, she just breaks those plans. It's great.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is she breaks the plans. It's like, if you're going to die, just keep the plans. Who cares? You know what?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I've got to close this loop before I die.
You don't want your dad's last thing to be like, oh man, I'd really miss her, but she did break plans with me.
It's like, I guess she doesn't have time to put flowers on the grave of her dead mom. That's not the last impression you want to make on your widowed father. Come on.
Okay, so Evan, the injured drunk driving boyfriend, I guess, is nervous that he's going to die during surgery, so he decides to make a run for it. He legs it down
so
the hall.
He writes a letter to himself saying, "Dear Evan, hands on," because his hands are still on his arms; they were not removed yet in the surgery.
Okay, it works.
He's trying. So the letter he's writing to himself, he has to remind himself that he's not talking to his other friend Evan, who I suppose
has no hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, Evan handless. Yeah,
but yeah, it's interesting that he, you know, on crutches decides that the best thing to do to avoid death is to go down a lot of flights of stairs.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is not exactly Final Destination, where it feels like death has to work pretty hard to set up these elaborate traps. Here, it's almost like if a mouse was throwing himself at a mouse trap, and you were like, let me put the cheese on it at least. Give me a moment to set it.
Well, and also, this is when he's running for it, we also see another big difference from Final Destination. Wow, Porky Pig did. He's looking at
and
a mirror.
And you're not wearing pants, so you did Porky Pig.
That's
yeah.
exactly. Thank you. It's this character thing that I'm doing. He's looking at a reflective surface, and he sees a shadowy demonic figure in the background. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is in your daddy's Final Destination, because there's none of that in that shit. And of course, like, there's a bit where like he looks in the mirror, and then all of a sudden the thing like rushes the mirror and it cracks. So he's like, okay, I'm going to go down a stairwell. Immediately he gets locked in, lights go out. Oh fuck, what am I going to do? His time's running out. He hears somebody else coming up the stairs. turns around. Oh no, it's his girlfriend, Courtney, but she's dead. She turns her face around. It's totally monster-fied. He falls down. What? Next thing we see, his phone clatters down the stairwell. Time is running out. And then right when it hits zero, his time hits zero, his battered body splats against the stairs. Period on the end of that sentence. cool. Okay. Let's see. Quinn goes to the morgue to inspect the body. She unlocks his phone using his dead
guy's
face.
Well, she goes to the morgue because she got his phone, right? Because she knows, because he told her that he had the countdown app, right?
Yeah. That was their first conversation. Yeah, that was what connects
connection. She is not just scared because the countdown app exists. She is scared because he has told her, like, oh, my girlfriend did die when countdown said. So she has at least some reason to believe that there might be something to this. And yeah, she goes in to unlock the phone to do a little investigating. And there's, you know, some
there's a couple of dead body bits where, like, it seems like the body's moving, or is it? Yeah, is like he a zombie?
Turns and look at her.
She has to open up the dead body's eyes, which is a little fun.
To unlock the phone. Yep. It would be so funny if it's like
shenanigans.
There's four or five levels of security. It's first its eyes, then its fingerprint, then its toe print,
knees
then its
toes,
penis
yeah.
print for some reason,
whoa,
and then its
print?
Navel print. So she's like, oh, so why is his phone so secure? Yeah, he's just a teenager.
Do you think I could pull off a penis print shirt?
Yeah, you look great. I mean, I think you could. You look amazing.
Thanks.
Quinn breaks her plans with her dad, then immediately gets a user agreement notification. She has broken her user agreement because I guess she changed her plans because she was worried she was going to die at a cemetery, which seems like the most convenient place to die.
Yeah.
That's really the thing that's concerning her.
Yeah.
She's not worried about her mortality so much as not inconveniencing other people who have to deal with her remains.
If you die at a cemetery, they don't even have to dig a hole. They just smush you into the ground and they walk away.
Throw her in the mulcher.
Yeah.
And then there's shadowy figures start appear in the background. What? Uh-oh. That's what happens when you break your user agreement, folks.
Because that's it's one of these. This is one of these demons where it's like, you're already going to kill these people. Do you really have to keep going like, maybe now? No. What about now? I'm not touching you. It seems like this is a pretty dicky demon. It's a dickish demon to be doing this stuff.
I mean, I feel like demons are probably not cool.
I don't know. Haven't you ever seen a tattoo on a young jazz musician's arm of like a cool devil man?
I did, and then I saw. Oh wait, what? He dies, and the tattoo's gone.
It goes. My job here is done. When I say jazz musician, what I really should have said is swing dancer.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Then Quinn gets assaulted by her supervising doctor, played by Peter Facinelli, who fights him off. And then before she can alert her supervising nurse, he calls the nurse away to undercut her and change the narrative. And then she immediately gets another notification from this fucking app. And at this point, I'm like, who fucking cares about the demon anymore? Like, this shit is serious.
Well, also, like, it is, I mean, look, I want to choose my words carefully because, like the sexual harassment is not funny, but the way that this movie handles it is so goofy because she, like, is going to talk to someone about it, and then she is thwarted so quickly and then never follows up on that. And then later on, they, like, suspend her without any investigation or like taking her
without even asking her
taking her side right
what her perspective was.
And look, I know that a lot of people have a lot of horrible experiences where they're not believed, but for a movie made now to have like a major hospital be like, we're not going to do any sort of investigation. Like, I just feel like to cover their own asses, they would do a little more than automatically assuming that the first person they talk to.
I'm of two minds, Dan. I'm of two minds because one, it's so ham-handedly handled in this that it is very like, you do think that something, even the fact that like, she's like, I've got to tell you something to the supervisor. And the doctor's like, supervisor, I need you to do something for me. And she's like, can it wait a minute? And at that moment, she just has to say, look, that doctor just, I mean, it's hard to say those things, especially when he's right there.
Obviously.
But say like, no, this is really serious. I need your help. But instead, she's just like, like sitcom kind of can't say it. But
I mean,
also,
I'm going to side with Dan more is that rather than blaming her actions, I would argue the the way that the hospital reacts seems wilder to me.
Well, that's what I'm
going to
say. I think Dan is being a little naive at the same time,
yeah.
that even in the time we live in, he is a powerful doctor. He's seemingly the only doctor in the whole hospital. We never see any other ones. She is the newest nurse on the job. The hospital, and hospitals do not like, they do not like to have those stories. Even today, in the world we live in, Dan, power still gets to cover up.
I agree that, like—
But it's handled so ridiculously.
As a surgeon, like, he has the power in that situation compared to this
nurse. I thought you were
about
to say, I believe as a surgeon that—and I was like, Dan, surgeon?
No, I believe that. But the movie does not do it in any way that—like, they have made up their decision before she walks in the door.
Yes, yeah.
And they're like, we're not even going to listen to— anything. And like even he says, like, oh, it's a he said she said scenario. I'm like, yeah, she hasn't said anything yet.
I think our conversation about this really highlights one of the issues with the movie is how once this plot is introduced, the idea of the demon stuff is like, okay, this is silly. Let's talk about the serious thing that is
serious issues of
what it really says is if you're making what I think it is that if you're going to make a horror movie that is relevant in some way, that relevance should play into the main gimmick or conceit of the movie, as opposed to there's a demonic app. We're making this movie about how social media, I guess, or apps. There's a demonic app that kills people. But we should also put some Me Too stuff in there.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't put some Me Too stuff in
this. No, you got to understand that the demon Ozen is the demon of knowing when you're supposed to die and changing the rules, and also abuse of power and sexual assault.
Oh, yeah. I see. It's like if you want to address that issue, make a movie about that issue.
Yeah.
As opposed to
anyway,
trying to
I want to make it clear. I am aware that there are a lot of situations in real life where there are terrible miscarriages of justice. I'm just saying that in this movie, the movie doesn't do a very good job of what it wants to do, which is just be like, this is so unfair, but like, it's still, I don't know, not seeming like it just is being handled in the silliest way possible.
Because it's such a tangential issue in this, and it's not the main focus of the movie, so they really don't have a lot of real estate to spend on it.
Yeah.
And they just sort of wave it away. I do like that, Dan, you mentioned about how in real life it'd be different because you, of course, are a real life expert. Is this your Dan in real life?
He is Dan in real life.
That's true.
Pancake enthusiast.
I had waffles this morning. Do you think that's a betrayal?
That is a fucking betrayal.
Depends on what you do. Did you eat them or did you lay your head on them like a sad pillow?
I just held them up to my face and gently caressed them against my cheek.
Okay, so Quinn goes home and she starts looking up stuff. She looks up some reports on the Countdown app being tied to deaths. Mm-hmm. She watches a video that a woman who was bedeviled by the Countdown app of her dying. And people, of course, are like, cap, this is bullshit, this is fake.
I do have a question, which is, like, who uploaded this video? Because she, like, dies at the end of her own video. And it did not seem to be, like, the movie could have handled this, I guess, by making it look like a live stream that then someone else put up.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest, is it was a live stream or a Twitch stream.
But
or
I forgot to mention like that one of the video.
I forgot that, to mention that one of the comments that said it was fake was actually from user Dank McCoy.
Who uploaded?
So I think debate me. That's how he ends that comment. I think that what I like about this scene is that it harkened back to my first Flophouse episode, I Know Who Killed Me, where she's doing research on telepathy or something like that. And she pulls up a video with the host of Coast to Coast, Bell? And it was like, you know what? The internet doesn't really work this way. And now, almost 20 years later, the internet still does it. They're only making baby steps towards movies, kind of illustrating how the internet actually works.
Yeah.
By at least including comments that are hating on the video. So, you know what? Movies, you're trying your best. You're making slow progress.
Yeah.
But, you know, one small step for Countdown, one giant leap for depictions of the internet in lowish budget horror movies.
So, research complete. Quinn closes her laptop only to see the ghost of Evan, now monstrified, sitting on the edge of her bed, and she gets scared, so she runs out of there, breaks her phone.
You should have said, any questions?
She breaks her phone on the ground and then goes and sleeps in her car. She then gets woken up by her sister Jordan. They get in a fight, but in the process, her sister learns about the Countdown app. Uh-oh, is that going to play into the story? Of course it does. She goes to buy a new phone from Tom Segura, who is pretty funny in this movie.
This is one of two scenes in the movie where the movie starts embracing the inherent ridiculousness of the premise by having very comedy characters. And I thought he was really funny in it.
And I kind of feel bad that this movie was, you know, to offer a preview of my feelings later. Well, no, I feel bad that this movie was so shat upon just because we have watched so many movies like this for the Flophouse that are sort of aiming at a similar thing and doing it with so much less, at least attempt to, like, or care. Like, there are moments in this film where, like, a scene shows up where an ancillary character, like this phone seller,
phone doctor,
comes up.
Hacker, phone doctor.
And I'm like, oh, whoever made this, they were trying to make this work. They were trying something. They were adding a little extra pepper to it in a way that I've seen so many other movies do this type of thing and not even bother to make any of it interesting. And so I really appreciate when we meet this character who is just introduced being an absolute asshole to another.
And she buys this new phone, and of course the app mysteriously appears on it before she leaves the store. What? She throws a fit in the store, goes out in her car, gets attacked by a specter, and then gets rescued by a guy who overheard her talking about the app in the store. This guy, Matt, who turns out also has downloaded the Countdown app and doesn't have long to live. They go to a bar. They find an old drunk conspiracy
this
nut.
This is one of those. This reminds me this happens in a lot of these movies where they're like, we've only got hours to live. We've got to get on top of this. And then it cuts to nighttime and they're at a bar. And I was like, so I guess you're going to get on this tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand.
It was kind of like how I would write papers in college.
There's a scene in Ringu where they're like, they only have a week to live. They got that phone call and they're researching and they go, oh, a lot of research. I guess I'll go home now. And I'm like, I don't think you should. Like, just keep working.
Elliot, you know, you need a work-life balance, okay?
Yeah, dude.
Elliot's on that grind set, Dan. You don't care. I think when I know I only have a limited number of days to live, I'm going to be on that grind.
Honestly, you know,
I'm not going to give up.
Guys, if this was me, if I downloaded the app, I'd be like, okay, I get it. That's fine.
I kind of was hoping at a certain point that the moral of the movie was going to be acceptance of fate, that it was going to be like, if this is what's allotted to me, I'm going to meet it with calm and with peacefulness and acceptance, and I'm not going to make a fuss, but that's not what this movie is about. In which case, don't go to a bar and just have a drink later in the day. Like, do your work.
So they're commiserating over their mutual situation where neither of them had read the user agreement. So they're talking to this old drunk guy who is spouting some general conspiracy stuff, and they're like, hey, why don't we get this guy to download the app onto his phone? And Quinn's like, no, I don't want to, you know, tie this guy's soul to a devil. And then the guy says something about not believing in the Holocaust, and she's like, okay, let's get him to download it, which they do, and they read the user agreement.
Movie, I'm realizing it exists in two different worlds, that it keeps going back and forth between the kind of standard, not that interesting, takes itself very seriously, boilerplate horror movie world that we've seen so many times, and this kooky world where there's just kind of nutty character, like this Daniel Clowes world that is slightly sideways, or where Daniel Clowes, I don't remember how to pronounce it. Where it's like, where there's this super insulting phone guy, and then later on there's the fanboy priest, and then there's this conspiracy nutball who's so loudly and bigly a cartoon of that kind of person at the bar, like, I kind of wondered.
I see those guys all the time.
I guess that's true.
As long as we're correcting name pronunciations, I believe it's Peter Facinelli.
Facinelli, okay. Peter Facinelli, if you're listening, write in. Tell us if we're right or wrong. Yeah.
And let me know if in New Jersey I should say Facinel.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so they go to the hospital, where Matt has a scary encounter with a little boy.
Wait,
the men's room?
Talk about what they learned from the user agreement, though?
Yeah.
I guess we talked about it earlier. Okay.
If after learning the time of their death, if they change their life in any way, they break the agreement, which, again, I feel like it's almost impossible not to.
Yeah.
I have two things I want to say about this. First is that if it says you'll live to be 70 years old, and then at some point you just make a different decision you don't even know it's related to. Like, you go into this room instead of that room, and you don't meet the woman that you'll marry, and then she'll murder you eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you – does it then tell you
like,
you're
no,
used to
like,
you don't
I like
even
this
know?
Narrative you're
no,
already
no,
took
no.
Out.
It has to be – I think it has to be a conscious choice.
It
like,
has to be
– because –
because then that's the other thing, because that's my other thing, is that it seems like a really poor understanding of what fate is. Because my understanding of fate is it's like in Oedipus Rex, where every single thing they did to try to avoid the prophecy – made it happen, as opposed to you did something different and now a ghost comes and kills you. You know, it's not like it wasn't like, okay, Tiresias said that my son is going to kill me and have sex with his mother.
Right.
I guess I'll get rid of him. And then a demon goes, no, 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 and picks up the son and pushes him on top of the mom.
No,
to
I
make
understand
it happen,
what you're
you
saying,
know?
But this app plays by Final Destination rules where it's like, well, oh, I've you escaped like- the thing. So now another thing that's totally unrelated is going to come and get you.
That brings me up my thing about Final Destination that I must have mentioned before, where I just think it's so goofy that Death is like, oh, you escaped me. I'm going to get you. And it's like, just wait it out, Death. Everybody dies. Like it's not
well,
like they get away forever.
Job,
yeah, but it's super fun.
It is really fun the way they do it.
He's
but
a jokester.
But, like, but the idea that like, ooh, now you've escaped my clutches and I've got to work extra hard to get you. It reminds me of something that an old coworker of mine, Rich Blomquist, once said when a woman who was the last survivor of the Titanic died and she had been a baby when the ship went down, and he goes, "Curse the Titanic. Nobody gets away." It's like the idea that the Titanic had tracked her down 100 years later and finally took her out.
Yeah. Okay, so Matt has a scary encounter with a little boy ghost in the men's room. This had a couple of good scares. I like the bit where you see the little boy's feet walking behind the stall. Like, he's, like, in the stalls,
yeah,
but he's,
good.
Like, going through the dividers. Unless they had removed the dividers, like, this one bathroom
yeah,
at one of the dorms in
yeah,
the college
bathroom,
I went to.
So you can, it's called a neighbor bathroom, where they want everyone sitting in the stalls to be neighbors and talk and things to each other.
We've shielded you from the outside world of the bathroom foyer, I guess, but inside here we're
well
all...
they're like look, you're either in or you're out. If you want to see these people, you got to get in a stall and start pooping.
It's like
if you're
a
not
modern,
willing to take that step
it's a
you
modern
can't see them.
It's a modern take on the concept of salons.
Interesting.
Okay, so and then like and there's a bit
why
where it's like
why can't everyone be a Louis XVI being watched while you poop and talking to your courtiers?
Yeah. Okay, so, and also this is when the evil doctor, Dr. Sullivan, tries to ruin Quinn's life. They bring her into a meeting with HR department, who immediately accuse her of assaulting him, and they are going to suspend her. And she obviously is dealing with a lot, and she can't deal with this situation. And she doesn't even have, like, any representative to help her out. It's really bad. So she storms out. And so Quinn and Matt then, at the direction of the hospital pastor, go to speak with Father John, a kind of non-traditional priest who's into demonology and stuff, and listens, what, to like trap music or something?
Yeah, they might as well have called him Father Otaku, because he's just like super, super demon fanboy.
Yeah, and I think he is implied to be maybe stoned when they show up, because he's really concerned about his Grubhub arriving, and he's eating the communion wafers as if they're like chips.
Uh-huh. And so
maybe, yeah, I didn't put it together that he's stoned, but he's certainly not your daddy's priest.
Yeah.
Unless your daddy was Jerry Garcia, I guess. I don't know.
He immediately is on board, and he explains to them this story about a general who learned the time of his death, so he swapped places with his brother, but then he still died anyway.
He uses a commonly used but not acceptable slur for Roma many times, and each time it really I didn't like the sound of it. Yeah,
and it's all tied in with his demon Ozen. Okay, so from now on, we know the demon we're dealing with is Ozen the demon.
Ozone.
Yep.
Ozen. Oh, he's the demon that's causing global warming too.
And they realize, If they're gonna figure out because this is all tied in with like a contractual agreement, they're going to need to hack that. They're going to need to get into that app, so they need a hacker. So they track down the guy who runs the cell phone store, Tom Segura, who to hack the app. He has to postpone his Tinder date. Don't worry, he still has it in the mid-credit sequence.
I'm so glad, because I skip forward to see if there's a mid-credit sequence. I'm like, I'm sure hope that Stewart is doing this too.
Yeah.
He's doing the summary.
Yeah. I mean, it was just lucky that I just left the TV running while I was doing other stuff. Okay.
Because you were so scared that you couldn't bear to turn it off.
Yeah. Now, I feel like if I poked my hand out from under the blanket to get the remote, that the demon Ozen would rip my arm clean off my body.
Now, I want to ask our audience, I'm looking at my brief internet
they
research.
Aren't here,
I
couldn't, Elliot.
No, I want them to write in later. As I established early on, I'm aware of this a one-way street, that is Ozen a real demon? Is it based on a real demon, or is it totally made up for the movie? Because all I can find online is references to the movie, and I'm curious whether they made up a fake demon or had the balls to use a real demon and risk that demon coming along and suing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan, you're the Christian demonology expert.
I've never heard of this demon. Also, the legend, they didn't try and make that story into like something from the Bible, right? That was just something that. Because I don't think that's from anything. Like I've heard versions of a similar story.
Yes. Well, there's the story of the appointment in Samara and things like that.
Exactly.
Right. Like I think that it's not exactly the same, I guess, but you know what I mean. But like I don't think he's presenting it as something from the Bible. He does say there are demons in the Bible, but I don't think he says that this particular story is
hot take.
Okay, so so Tom Segura hacks into their phones. He hacks into the app. There's a ton of information there. In fact, it has the name and the countdown clock of everybody who's downloaded the app. And we find out, oh no, Quinn's sister Jordan has downloaded the app. Of course. So he hacks his data as well as the three of them, Quinn, her sister, and Matt, and gives them all a bunch of years. Oh wow, Ozen has been defeated,
and it seems to work on their apps. And I love this idea that, like, you know, obviously we all know this is not going to stick, but I do love the idea.
No, because there's lots of movie left.
there's enough actual like code involved in this mystical app that, like, it's like, okay, well, I guess the number does have to change.
Yeah.
At least temporarily.
So Quinn and Matt are still a little shook up.
I guess at this point, the movie enters. It's kind of like a low rent version of Prince of Darkness, where it's kind of a mix of technology and magic and faith and things like that. But you know, without any of the greatness,
without
that
being
of
incredible,
has.
Yeah,
without being amazing, yeah. Without being a waking nightmare that even finds horror in VHS video formats
And missing a soundtrack that is both banging and terrifying. Quinn and Matt decide to stay the night together, but like as friends, and they do this like sleepover confesh sesh where they like reveal their deepest, darkest secrets, and then they end up in bed together. Ozen attacks and deletes a bunch of time, so their apps go back to normal. You can't trick Ozen like that. He doesn't fuck around. Sister Jordan starts to see scary stuff. There's like a motion sensor nightlight in the hallway in the place she's staying, and that's like, okay, like it could have been. Yeah, it's pretty scary. Ozen uses the nightlight. He uses mom ghosts. He does all kinds of stuff to mess with Jordan. But then Quinn and Matt show up and take her away. They go and meet up with Father John again, and Father John comes up with a plan. They're going to beat the clock using holy magic. What they need to do is they need to prove that the devil is a liar in this case. So they need to prove that somebody survives, assuming that nobody kills themselves first. They need to prove that the clock is wrong and that somebody is going to outlive the time that is allotted to them.
Yeah, if they can do something different than what the clock says, then the curse is broken.
And so they make a salt.
And Apple removes the app from the store.
Yep. So they make a salt circle in the basement, and they try and hide in the holy salt circle before Matt's clock is up.
A salt circle and a salt Star of David, which was a little bit of appropriation that I didn't care for, but you know.
I mean, isn't a Star of David inside a circle a pentagram? Doesn't that?
No. The pentagram is a five-sided star. Yeah. A Star of David is a six-sided star. Yeah.
Okay.
So all those notebooks that you were drawing those images on because you thought they were cool and demonic, you're actually just Jewish.
Jewish, Dan. Okay, when you were like, don't mess with me, I've got power, and you showed people the pentagrams you draw.
Look at me. Like, look at me, I'm Alan Moore.
I got to start studying my Hebrew. LaFay. I'm way overdue for my bar mitzvah.
Yeah, you've got to be bar mitzvah now, Dan.
Okay. So,
I mean, at least I'll get that money.
So Ozan, of course.
Wait, Dan. I don't like the stereotype that you're already living.
I'm talking about the money for my bar mitzvah.
That's just the fact that you're greedy for it.
Why is Dan rubbing his palms together and hunching his shoulders?
I was greedy as a Gentile. I'll be greedy now.
Why is Dan applying for a job at the bank in the J.K. Rowling books?
Yeah, why is he applying for a job? Oh, woof. Okay, so Matt's time's almost up. So, of course, it's time for Ozan to show up, and he does. Now, guys, I think Ozan kind of looks cool. He's like, he kind of looks like the curator, the lead singer from the band Portal. he's like a tall monster draped in like a black sheet, and he's like dusty, and you can kind of see his like eyes and teeth a little bit, right?
Yeah. I thought he was a fine looking kind of demon.
I mean, not exciting, but there's a couple of moments where
I like him later on when he like gets like sucked into like a black hole.
That's true. I like that too. Cool. Anyway. Not the best, but could have been worse. That's my review of Ozan.
3.6 stars.
Yeah, 3.6 stars. So Ozan is stymied by the salt. So he decides
just like the hit song, stymied by the salt.
Oh my god, Elliot! High five across the world.
Woo. Boom! We did it.
Okay.
Tried to kill him by the countdown, but they made a lot of salt.
Mm-hmm. Wrapped up like a douche.
It's not the lyrics, but it sounds like it. That's for sure.
Ozan sends a toy dinosaur and lures Matt outside of the circle. And
now this makes sense because of the story that Matt told earlier about his guilt over stealing a toy dinosaur from his dying brother. So that it's not like it's just he was just like, cool, I love dinos.
It was a pretty cool dino.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a stegosaur, but that's okay. Stegosaur, he's up there, man. He's got all those spikes.
Yeah, that's my wife's favorite dinosaur.
What's,
me? I'm all about Deinonychus because I love those theropods.
Yep. What about you, Dan?
Why can't I remember the one that's like kind of like it's got the horns and it's like
Triceratops?
Yeah, I like that one.
Oh, that's a cool one.
Okay. I also like, you know, the ones that are in water are nice.
Mm-hmm. Plesiosaurs, Elasmosaurs, those are technically not dinosaurs. They're marine reptiles, but that's okay.
Okay.
I've never been able to figure out why, but dinosaurs only live on land. They don't fly or swim. Very strange, huh?
Well, they fly now.
Yeah. And now they fly because they're birds. That's true. And also, if a fossil is being transported, usually you put it on a plane, I guess.
Yeah, true.
They also fly because they have developed tech that gives them rocket packs so they can fly around.
You're thinking of dino saucers. That's a little different.
Oh, fuck. I am thinking of dino saucers. Yeah. Okay. So he leaves the protection of the circle. Ozan snatches him by the leg and drags him outside into the street.
Get over here. Yeah. That kind of thing.
So they chase after him and he's like, I've survived. And then a truck immediately runs him over. He gets smushed into a tree. He did not survive. And in the process of the whole demon fight there, Jordan was injured. So they have to rush her to the hospital. A fellow nurse, while they're dealing with the demon stuff, a fellow nurse comes up and is like, I know what you're talking about. Dr. Sullivan also assaulted me. I will stand with you. Solidarity. And she's like, okay, let's do this. We'll do this later, though. I got a demon to deal with. Dr. Sullivan at the time is currently healing, using a heal spell on her daughter or sister Jordan.
I don't know about that.
He just seems to be looking at her abdomen where she got hurt.
Yeah.
And Quinn comes up with the idea she tries to trick Dr. Sullivan into meeting her into the abandoned wing of the hospital, which is filled with, you know, like dust and plastic sheets and ladders.
Every hospital
has a
spooky district. Yeah, every hospital has a spooky wing. It's abandoned, it's full of ghosts, it's full of cobwebs. Mm-hmm. They call them kingdoms. And that's where you go if you want to have spooky stuff at a hospital. Yeah.
So she tricks him into meeting her there, under the pretense that she is going to try and get her job back by giving
through
him
sexual favors.
Yep.
Yeah.
But instead she
because the way to a man's heart is through your vagina.
Uh huh.
She thinks. Yeah.
So she starts attacking him and is about to kill him with morphine, an overdose of morphine.
Yeah.
Because if she can kill him, that'll mess with, he had already downloaded the app and it said he was going to live 70 more years. And she's like, we'll fucking see about that shit. And right before she can kill him, Ozan snatches him away.
Yeah. Hey.
It's like what we were talking about before.
Yeah, exactly. Stay in your lane, Ozan yells.
Jordan's time is running out. She's supposed to die even before Quinn. They're both on like minutes at this point. So she's running around. Ozan attacks her.
Do we ever get any? Sorry, I'm just realizing. Do we ever get any clarity on what happens to that doctor? Like,
yeah. We'll get to that at the end.
Okay, I missed it. So
Ozan's about to kill Jordan when Quinn shows up, and she makes a desperate last ploy to commit suicide using an overdose of morphine. And Ozan is like, wait a minute, I'm going to morph into your mom and your dead mom and try and convince you not to kill yourself.
This was a strange choice on Ozan's part because Ozan doesn't have a lot of time. I don't know what gender Ozan is, but Ozan needs to stop her from killing herself. At the same time, Ozan has to kill Jordan. You'd think that Ozan would choose a faster method, like maybe snatching the morphine out of her hands or something like that, pushing her down, rather than the psychological method of pretending to be her mom to talk her out of it.
Yeah, if you're going to morph into something, morph into like an old-timey cowboy with a lariat to like lasso it out of her hand.
Or just for fun, do that.
Because she would be fucking shocked if you were just hanging out in a hospital wing and all of a sudden there's a cowboy there.
Yeah, Pecos Bill, your lariat's a snake? This is amazing.
I just like to take a moment also to say that her dead mom, or at least the version of her that we see, played by Andrea Anders, who I know best from, she was the love interest in Better Off Ted.
Oh, okay.
She was in the short-lived but full of future stars sitcom The Class that I watched. And most recently, she's Ted Lasso's estranged wife. So a bit of sitcom royalty.
There's a lot of more small screen best known actors in this. Yeah. I feel like everyone here, they're best known for their television work.
You know, probably what in the script, it was probably Ozan morphs into the cowboy, but they're like, wait a minute, we have this actress. Let's have her be the mom.
And they're like, from The Class?
Sorry, Tex. We gotta cut you. We got a better replacement. Aw, shucks. They were going to put me in the movie.
No, I understand. Better Off Ted was a great show. It was kind of hampered by a stupid name and a bad time slot.
Didn't really tell people what to expect from the show.
It's like Happy Endings. Like, what the fuck? but Quinn injects herself with the morphine. Ozan is not pleased with this and morphs into dust, a final morph. Quinn falls down and dies, and Jordan rushes over to her sister's dead body, only to see that there are instructions written on her body in Sharpie instructing where to insert the Narcan, a plot point that was mentioned way earlier in the movie, but I didn't mention it because it seemed like it didn't matter. But it does matter, and you should have been paying attention.
Except for, as IMDb Goofs points out, Narcan...
This is a true goof. Dan is prone to point out fake goofs. This is a
real one. Narcan will not bring back someone who has died from a morphine overdose.
That if your heart has stopped, then putting an overdose-fighting drug will not... restart your heart.
So what happens is, of course, Jordan injects the Narcan into Quinn, and Quinn comes back to life, and all of a sudden, Bring Me to Life by Evanescence starts blasting. Ozan's like, this song's dope, actually. And everybody's fucking rocking. It rules.
The end of Zatoichi the Blind Assassin, where they all just dance.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then we get a fast forward, flash forward.
Blind Swordsman. Sorry.
Mm. Yeah. So we are in the graveyard. Quinn, Jordan, and their dad are leaving flowers at their mother's grave. Then they read on their cell phone that the doctor has been arrested for assaulting multiple women. More women have come forward. There's a mugshot of him that's pretty goofy.
That's fine, but she also did hit him with like a crowbar. This is the part that I like. I'm not sure that the film
adequately
resolves that. Okay. Well, anyway.
Okay. And then they're like, okay, well, next time you drive. And then immediately they get a they get a notification.
Hey guys, I just saw this cool new app. Here we go again.
Well, that's what happens. They get a notification that the app has been updated, and she's like, what the fuck? And then the movie's over.
Fired, whatever.
Until we
web
get
developer had the flaw in the first version, and they
look, we're coming out with Countdown 2.0. We're looking for unicorns. We gotta get this thing off the ground. We're valued at $4 billion right now, so we think we can get a little bit of VC,
unicorns.
Get this thing going.
Yeah, again. Yeah. What?
Looking for unicorns?
Yeah, yeah.
Unicorn yeah, they're
sharks.
Investors. Yeah,
angel investors.
Unicorns is different than angel investors.
Is it? Okay. I only know the sexual application of unicorns.
The only thing I know about unicorns is that I feel like it was a waste of fucking Walton Goggins' talent to make him play a fucking Pilsner guy on this bullshit network sitcom. Okay. Movie's over. I don't think so. There's a lengthy mid-credit sequence where
yes,
Tom Segura's character
long.
Is on his Tinder date. He is clearly mismatched with this woman. He is kind of an asshole, talking over her, making inappropriate comments.
I kind of realized my limit with Tom. My limit with Tom Segura, I guess, is two scenes. Because by this scene, I was like, I don't really need any more of him in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. They really play up how big of a creep asshole he is. And then he is alone in a dark restaurant. All the lights go out, and then we hear like Ozen chuckle or something, and he's like, oh no, I'm dead. End of movie. Bring Me to Life by Evanescence starts cranking. Everybody's headbanging. It fucking rules.
Everyone in the cast comes out and takes a bow, multiple bows.
I know.
Take a Bow by Madonna plays. It's very sad. Yeah. They take another bow.
Somber, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so well, this is the part
and
where
then R.I.P. Angela Lansbury across the screen, and we're like, what is this?
Spelled this movie came out 2019. How did they know? Because
the
of the app. That's how they do.
App.
Yeah. So this is where we'd give our final judgments, and we have our Shocktober categories. Whether
I gotta say,
was,
guys, I killed that summary.
You did.
Time.
You did a great job. You did a great job. You owes into that summary. You killed
it
right on
time. I can't
wait
to hear the fucking peach bit.
But is this movie totally scarifying?
Can we hear the fake podcast you host talk about your summary?
I feel like it's going to be favorable.
Is this movie totally scarifying? Is it totally snorifying? Or is it frighteningly funny? Of course, nonsense categories. I'm just going to say, like, I kind of liked this. I mean, I tipped towards it before. I think the thing is, I've seen
so many.
Tipped
towards Through the Tulips to it.
I've seen so many movies like this that are trying to do basically this kind of thing and do it badly that I appreciate that this movie is a trim 90 minutes. It mostly feels like 90 minutes. There's a bit towards like the start of Act 3 that I thought dragged more than the rest of the movie. But in general, I felt like it was pretty fleet. It tried to do a few more fun things with its dumb premise. It's not as good as like a Final Destination movie, but it's aiming towards that tone. And it's, you know, like there's a lot of elevated horror. This is a, like a different type of horror. This is like a traditional, like, I don't know, young teens want a pop horror movie that's going to have a few jump scares that they can go to that's not going to be too brutal in any way. And I don't know, on a silly level, I liked it. I looked at the Wikipedia page and I found with delight that my good friend Kimber Myers is the quoted critic from her review in the LA Times. She was like the one like more positive review they could find to put on the Wikipedia page to have like a balanced idea of what the critical response was. And I'm like, I texted her. I'm like, I liked it too. You know, not great. Like there's certainly don't run out and see it, but of the movies that I'm forced to watch for this podcast, I liked it. Okay. What do you guys have to say?
Yeah. I mean, I feel I'm kind of in between between a bad movie and a movie I kind of liked, because there's definitely stuff that I like about it. There are some jokes and there's some silly stuff that actually works. I feel like there is a bit of a tone misjudgment when it comes to the mixing of silly app demon and sexual assault by a superior. But yeah, I feel like if it had leaned more into the sillier stuff, it could have been closer to something like a Happy Death Day territory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I feel like it's not that far from that kind of a movie.
I think that's what I was shooting for, definitely.
Yeah, I wish it was like, I wish they had stepped back and were like, how can we make this a little bit sillier?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a movie that is having trouble finding that balance. It doesn't know exactly what kind of movie it is or wants to be in that way. I have to admit, I found it mostly fairly snorifying, but not as snorifying as other movies we've watched. I give it a solid 2 to 2.5 stars, you know, on a 4 or 5 star rating.
Wow, you could do worse. Even 3.6.
Not even 3.6. You could do worse, but you could also do a lot better. Maybe, but I feel like I'm coming to it from a biased point of view of having seen a number of very good movies recently in my personal life. Mm-hmm. And so I'm coming to it from the point of view of, oh, movies are wonderful. So to see a movie that is merely kind of mediocre to sub is, you know, maybe I probably shouldn't have watched a movie for a couple weeks and then watched it. And I'd be like, this is amazing. It's like there's people right on my screen.
Frankly, I'm jealous that you got to watch a bunch of good movies.
Oh, it's all been about very strict curating of what I, of the things that I watch. But also of the two Shocktober movies we watched this year, I'd say go with Orphan because it knows what kind of movie it is.
Yep.
It's a bonkers opera. And it doesn't know if it's going to be serious or silly. So it becomes sillerous, which is not a word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn your words, movie.
Her Majesty served Great Britain and the Commonwealth loyally for over 70 years. And while, of course, we feel a profound sadness, we must remember she lived a long life and died in such a way that I think many of us would want for ourselves. She was at home, surrounded by her family. And, of course, she was listening to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast.
The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast, and you can find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're in a theater. The lights go down. You're about to get swept up by the characters and all their little details and interpersonal dramas. You look at them and think, that person is so obviously in love with their best friend. Wait, am I in love with my best friend? That character's mom is so overbearing. Why doesn't she just stand up to her? Oh God, do I need to stand up to my own mother? If you've ever recognized yourself in a movie, then join me, Jordan Cruciola, for the podcast Feeling Seen. We've talked to author Susan Orlean on realizing her own marriage was falling apart after watching Adaptation, an adaptation of her own work, and comedian Hari Kondabolu on why Harold and Kumar was a depressingly important movie for Southeast Asians. So join me every Thursday for the Feeling Seen podcast here on Maximum Fun.
Let's quickly acknowledge that we can't do this all on our own. I mean, we could, but it wouldn't be.
We did for a number of years.
It wouldn't be profitable for us. Yeah, it wouldn't be rewarding in the literal sense of there being rewards given. So I want to thank everyone who is a member of Maximum Fun and helps make the show possible, because by this point, we probably, you know, as much as we love it, couldn't keep doing it if it wasn't also a second job for all of us. But
it would be very hard to justify the time away from my family. Yeah.
But also, we have some sponsors that I would like to say thank you to as well. And one of them is Squarespace, which allows you to build a lovely website where you can engage with your audience. You can sell anything, products, content you create, even your time. It's the all-in-one platform for building your brand and growing your business online. And some of the things you can do with Squarespace, what are they? Well, you could sell your products on an online store, whether physical or digital products. Squarespace has the tools you need to sell online. You can create pro-level videos effortlessly, they say. The Squarespace Video Studio app, this app's not going to tell you when you die. It's going to help you make and share engaging videos to tell your story, grow your audience, and drive sales. Much more pleasant. Display posts for your display posts from your social profiles on your website. You can automatically push website content to your favorite social media channels so followers can share it too. So why not check out squarespace.com/flop for a free trial? And when you're ready to launch, use offer code FLOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Elliot, I believe you have a Jumbotron.
I do indeed have a Jumbotron. And this Jumbotron goes like this. Do you love musicals?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you love cast albums? Excuse me, I'm trying to read. These are not, these are rhetorical questions for the Jumbotron. Sorry. I'll start from the beginning. Yes. Do you love musicals? Do you love cast albums? Are you people? If you answered yes at least twice, you'll love The Original Cast, a podcast about original cast albums and the people who love them. Each episode, dramatist Patrick Flynn invites a guest to choose a cast album they love, and then they talk about the album, theater, musicals, resurrection machines, whatever. Past guests include Tony winners, NPR hosts, record producers, critics, and two-thirds of the Peaches. Stuart, the door is always open. That Resurrection Machines references to my episode of it. Here's your call to action. Get on your podcatcher of choice and listen to the occasionally number one performing arts podcast in South Korea. No joke and no clue why. The Original Cast. So I'm going to add that, Jumbotron. The Original Cast is a really great podcast. It's all about original cast albums to Broadway shows.
Stuart, I get on there if you can. I had a really good time. I don't think it's awful to say that sometimes I make an agreement to guest on a podcast. I'm like, ugh. I'm so busy this week. Is this going to be a hassle? Is this not going to be great? Once I started doing The Original Cast, I had so much fun talking musicals. Patrick was a great host. I really had a good time. So
me too. What did you talk about on your episode, Dan?
I talked about Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Which cast album? The original or the revival?
The Original Cast, yes.
Okay. Album. And I talked about the Music Man original cast album when I was on. I only asked because...
Rest
don't
in peace, yet again, Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, don't hate me, people. I kind of like the revival of Sweeney Todd, the album, more than the original Sweeney Todd album. But that's maybe because I saw one in person and one I didn't. Anyway, Stu, if you were going to be on that podcast, what musical album would you talk about?
Let's see. Is Power Slave by Iron Maiden a musical album?
I mean, their stage show is pretty close to theatrical event, so maybe, yeah.
Maybe they can
storytelling in that record. For you.
I've never been to a wedding that had a Music Man or Sweeney Todd cake, as I saw a Power Slave cake at Jenny Jaffe's recent wedding. So
nice.
Maybe, so that's one up on the others. So when you go on the Original Cake Cast, you can talk about it.
Oh, cool. I can do that. I can talk about a cake you saw one time.
Yeah. Well, it's called Overheard Cakes, and it's about cakes that you heard someone else talking about.
Okay.
Before we move on, do you guys want to make any plugs for yourselves?
Always. Please. I own 2 bars in Brooklyn, New York. And you know what? You should come visit them. We have booze. We have snacks. We have nice bartenders. Sometimes I'm there. Hinterlands Bar and Minnie's Bar in Brooklyn, New York. Bye.
I've got 3 things I want to plug, Dan.
Sturgis
one
left.
Is. Yeah, he left. Well, I guess we'll do the rest without him. The 3 things I want to plug. One, if you've got kids, why not listen to the Who Was podcast on iHeartRadio? That's a podcast I co-host, and it's really fun. It's a quiz show for kids about history. You don't.
sorry, not to remind them. Yeah.
That's funny. And not to remind from you don't have kids, or you want to spend your time away from your kids? How about Maniac of New York, my super violent comic book from Aftershock Comics? Volumes 1 and 2 are collected in stores now. Volume 3, Don't Call It a Comeback. That's the name of it. The Maniac of New York, Don't Call It a Comeback, comes out, I think, December 7th, the first issue. And number 3, let's go back to the kids again. My kids' books, Sharko and Hippo and Horse Meets Dog, still in bookstores. So that's some things for kids and some things for not for kids.
Yeah. Well, my book proposal that I sent out came back with a lot of people being very positive about my voice and a little confused about whether the book actually would have an audience. So if anyone wants to just publish that right now.
Wow.
I'll probably have to reconceive it. So
I mean, having read your book proposal, I think it's a very funny proposal. And I think you probably just need like a little bit more of a framework. Possibly.
Yeah, the framework is the key. But also, you know, if you want to save me time, if you're a big time editor and you just want to put the book out.
if anyone's listening is an editor at a publishing company or a publisher,
big time
talk
editor.
To my agent.
Dan has a proposal for a comedic book, and I have a novel that I want to start trying to sell. So get in touch.
Yeah. Oh,
Stu, what about you? What publishing projects are you trying to launch?
I'm still trying to publish that fucking coffee table book that's just pictures of dogs' faces while they're shitting.
Yeah.
Because they either look like super serious or super confused, and I think it's fucking hilarious. Like,
and now would you divide it into and one half of the book is serious and one's funny? No, or you would
it'd be
split
all
it up?
Mixed up. That's part of the joy of a coffee table book is just picking it up and flipping through that shit.
Sounds good. Hey, let's move on to letters. Why not?
Let's do it.
This letter is from Jonathan, last name with health, who writes, Elliot's favorite movie, as mentioned in episode, I assume that they're referring to the previous episode based on the rest of the email, is sure. Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, and yet Charlie Varick is snubbed? A markedly more successful criminal than Michael Caine, and it has Charlie in the title. Jonathan, last name withheld, taking you to task that your favorite Charlies didn't include Varick, as portrayed by Walter Matthau.
You're right. I mean, to be honest, Walter Matthau to me is Lieutenant Zachary Garber, or Grumpy Old Man. It's hard for me to think of him as any other character. Charlie Varick, I have to say, I like it. I don't love it. It's not one of my favorites of his. Yeah, It feels to me like a movie that I wish had either a little bit more comedy or a little bit less comedy. But that's okay, you know? Different people can disagree about things.
Pelham obviously is also like an action thriller, although, you know, Matthau doesn't do any action. But
no, it's talking action. He's very conversational. He flies in a car at one point.
What about that 10-minute-long martial arts sequence he does?
I was just going to say.
He does shoot someone at one point, but still.
I like that in Charlie Varick. 10-minute-long.
Yeah, the part, that single shot sequence where Walter Matthau's fighting his way down a hallway.
Yeah, yeah.
In both Charlie Varick and Hopscotch, he gets to be like an actual like tough guy. And I think that's. I mean, Hopscotch is a lot goofier, but
I can buy it more in Hopscotch because it's goofier. There's a part in Charlie Varick where he is a sex sim. He's like a sex god for a moment. And I'm like, this is a bridge I can't cross. I'm sorry.
I think it's fun that he got to do those things. Although, on the other hand, as I've been talking to Elliot about, I've been reading Mark Harris's biography of Mike Nichols, and Matthau sounds like a real asshole.
He does come off like a real, I've never read anything about him where someone other than Jack Lemmon was talking, where he came off as a friendly guy or someone you wanted to be around. Yeah.
So I hope that answers your question about Charlie Merrick.
Kind of like all the stories that are coming out now about Bill Murray, and you're like, yeah. He always seemed like a guy that would be very difficult to be around. Easy guy to spend time with.
As much as, the screen persona is appealing, you could see how this person is not someone you want to see in life, necessarily.
Yeah.
Ben Last Name Withheld writes, Dear Flophouse.
Ben Mankiewicz? Wow. Mm-hmm,
probably. Dear Flophouse, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Halloween, spooky season to the youths. And it always makes me reminisce on my favorite baddie fanged icons of pop culture, the Night Lords.
Mm-hmm.
Heretic, Astartes, cool,
yep.
Of the First Founding,
uh-huh, yep.
Big E's Eighth Legion,
uh-huh.
But number two in my heart, Space Wolves are number one, but I'm burnt out on those guys.
Cool.
Stuart, what kind of metal would you suggest an enthusiast blast whilst cladding their plastic in shades of midnight? I thought Slayer initially, but is that too on the nose? Much love, and thank you for making my Saturday morning commutes delightful. Ave Dominus Nox.
Mm-hmm. Cool, yeah.
That's Ben Last
Name Withheld. Is there any mention of Conrad Kurz or the Night Haunter in there?
I mean, you heard the letter. I don't know what you want from me.
Dan, turn it over. Look on the back. Is there anything on the back?
Back, it's over. my iPhone case. It's green.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Is that what you're looking for, Stu?
Yep, that's what I was looking for. Thank you. Painting Night Lords. They are a Chaos Space Marine Legion, and they're baddies, and they're a little spooky. You know what? I would recommend any of the Roadrunner King Diamond records. That's right. You got Fatal Portrait, Abigail, of course, Them, Conspiracy, all those. Check those out. They're great. The Eye. All those albums, they're great, they're spooky, and you know what? King Diamond rules.
Sounds good. As always, I zoned out. But now let's do the last part. Look at the rage in Stuart's eyes.
Mm-hmm. It's like I'm talking about summering. Warhammer. This is, and metal. This is important.
two of my favorite things.
No, sorry. I was distracted to look through my film diary to see what I was going to recommend, and of course... I've actually.
Can I talk about weightlifting or something else I like?
Sure.
Or are you just going to roll your fucking eyes at me again?
I look at all of your weightlifting TikToks. The ones that get posted to Instagram. I don't actually look at your TikTok.
You don't look at my fucking TikTok? What do you jack off to?
I don't look at TikTok ever. I don't know. It confuses and angers me.
Because it reminds you of a clock.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, there's two ways in which it reminds me of how old I am. let's move on to the final part of the show where we recommend movies that, and I've seen a lot of good movies lately, like Elliot has seen a lot of good movies, but one in particular I saw recently that I wanted to highlight. I saw Tar.
I thought you were going to be like, I saw a lot of good movies lately, like Elliot, and I want to highlight one of them. It's called Screwballs.
It's about a group of...
It's about a little bit of a gentleman's wager.
No, it's Tar with the little accent over the A. It's the Todd Field's new film, the first in, I think, like 12 years, starring Cate Blanchett. Mm-hmm. One of the things
The first one in 12 years that stars Cate Blanchett.
The first one he has made as a director since Little Children, I believe. And prior to that, he had made In the Bedroom.
Yeah.
So a good director who has not been able to make a lot lately. But Tar is even a giant leap forward, I think, from those other previous works of his. I think that it gets tarred, if you will, by being the cancel culture movie. But that would be sort of diminishing to it. I think that there are a lot of movies out there that pretend to be character studies because they want to talk about some sort of thing in society. Like they use the character study as an excuse to get to the societal thing. Whereas I think that this movie actually uses sort of public reckonings of figures who have misbehaved in some way as a way to get to a character study.
Yeah.
Which is kind of more interesting, I think, as a film. And one of the things I like about it is it plays out almost like a stage play for at least the first half, where we see Cate Blanchett's character interact with all people from different facets of her life, like whether it be her wife, whether it be a fan, her assistant, the other... conductor, like the assistant conductor, a student that she's teaching, and you get all the facets of who she is, like showing how people are very different depending on who they're interacting with, and showing sort of what her strengths and her shortcomings are. And like, you know, as the movie comes on, we learn that she has done some things that are terrible and that she absolutely deserves to have some sort of reckoning for, but you also have enough of a sense of her as a complex character that
you don't have to tell us everything that happens in the movie.
I don't know. You just like, it is that character study that I'm talking about. It's interesting to see this woman as she deals with her carefully constructed life, sort of whirling out of control. And I don't know. It was a movie that, unlike Elliot, I watch a lot of trash on my spare time.
What?
In addition to the good things. I mean, I watch good things too. I just rewatched Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf for one thing. But
checks out. Dan's not lying.
Let's check his movie
because
diary.
Because of that aforementioned Mike Nichols biography. But watching this, I was like, oh yeah.
you're like, I watch good movies too. I watched Wolf because of the Mike Nichols biography.
But this movie, I was watching, oh yeah, movies can do this. Like this is like,
yeah, yeah.
Like even beyond, you know, not watching, like maybe watching too much goofball shit. Like this is a movie that is doing something that I really haven't seen a film try and tackle, at least in a long, long time. And I enjoyed it. I really appreciated sort of being enveloped in something that was genuinely great for once. Anyway.
Now I want to hear what Elliot is going to recommend.
Yeah, what are you going to recommend, Mr. I Watch Good Movies Now?
Anyway, so there's a little movie called Predator 2, and it's the story of...
John Predator.
No, I watched... The movie I watched that I want to talk about is... Not a new movie, but an older movie. This is a movie called El Sur. It's a Spanish movie from 1983. It's by the same director Victor Erice, I think his name is pronounced, who made Spirit of the Beehive, if you're familiar with that film, which I feel like if there's any Spanish movie that's not by made by either Buñuel or Almodóvar that gets mentioned, it's Spirit of the Beehive. But El Sur is a movie about a young girl and her relationship with her family, but specifically her father. And it's narrated by that girl after she's all grown up. But it's telling the story of her childhood and how her father, who seems to have kind of secrets in his past that she can't fully penetrate, but there's something about him that makes him the more special of the two parents to her. Maybe it's because of those secrets. Maybe it was because he doesn't quite understand her and she doesn't quite understand him. And it's a movie that the director considered it a kind of half-made movie because it's only 95 minutes long and it ends at a point where the director was hoping to continue the film. But to me, it felt very fulfilling and very complete. And the south of the title is where her father is from, this place that she's never been and she's very curious about. But because of a political disagreement with his father in the Spanish Civil War years, he's left that place. And it's a really beautiful looking movie. It's very kind of like dim and cozy is how I would say a lot of the visuals in this very early 80s way. And it just felt to me like a movie about a real thing about how that I'd never really thought that much about before, which is that even when you know your parents or you learn more about them, there's always an emotional truth to them that remains a mystery to you and an emotional truth about you that remains a mystery to them, that no matter how much you love a member of your family, specifically a parent or a child, you can't, there's always going to be a part of them that you don't know, but which to them feels omnipresent and inescapable. And I feel like this movie really captured that in a way that really moved me and I found very beautiful. And so it was after seeing a lot of, not terrible movies, but movies where I was like, that was fun, that was okay. Seeing a movie like this that really, you know, touched me very deeply, which I thought was visually very beautiful. It was like, it's similar to what Dan was, his reaction to Tar, where it was like, oh, right. Like, this is why I love movies, is because they speak to me in a way that otherwise I don't know how to be spoken to or how to speak to others. And so I really loved it. And it coming as a movie that I didn't know anything about going into it. I had never heard of it until I did the thing I do where I record any foreign movie I've never heard of that comes up on Turner Classic Movies. And so I really liked a lot. So that's El Sur, literally the South, from 1983. Don't know where you can find it. I don't know where it's streaming, but look for it. Why not?
And I have a little bit of a qualified recommendation. It's a movie that you can currently stream on Shudder called The Innocents. It was written and directed by the guy who wrote my favorite movie from last year, The Worst Person in the World, a movie that also reaffirmed my love of film and touched me deeply. The Innocents, maybe not as much, but it is a thriller about a group of children living in a housing complex in Norway. And the children start to develop kind of strange powers, and it is very kind of deliberate, patient. It makes a lot of effort to kind of build the world of that these children inhabit. It relies a lot on the acting chops of a group of, you know, a small group of children, and it ends up. It kind of plays out a little bit like, it reminded me a little bit of like Domu, A Child's Dream, the Kazuhiro Otomo comic.
Yeah.
And also, you know, with some like, you know, like Lord of the Flies, like kids making decisions that are, you know, get increasingly more dangerous. And it, the part of the reason it's qualified is that it is fairly slow and deliberate. It's also, violent, and the violence is often directed at children and animals. Mm. So it can be a difficult watch, but it is a very beautiful movie.
I just want to, that's a great recommendation. I just want to backtrack and say that El Sur, I looked it up, is streaming on Criterion right now.
Oh, okay.
And of course, Tar is in theaters. I also wanted to say, like, I mentioned Tar giving me the feeling of a play. I don't want that to be misinterpreted. I just meant in that it has these scenes that are allowed to extend longer than a movie scene usually is, so we can really, like, live in it with the characters. But it's very cinematic, especially with the use of sound. Yeah. See, we know movies. We know other movies.
We don't just watch
Countdown.
We're just all Countdown. Come on. A movie that we kind of liked.
A movie that was fine for what it is.
It was fine. It was okay.
It does you know,
you know, you only have so many, according to my phone, I only have so many hours and days left in my life. I kind of don't want to go into it, but you know what, guys, I'm fine with it. It's okay. Cool. I get, you know, okay. Life. I get it.
That's the
best way to deal with it, probably. You know, I mean, Dylan Thomas would disagree. He would say rage, but you know,
he was probably fucking drunk when he said that.
Wow. I mean, probably, yeah.
That kind of makes me feel like Stuart doesn't have that much time left, so we should probably sign off. I just want to say before we go, thank you to Maximum Fun. Check out all the other great podcasts on the Maximum Fun Network at MaximumFun.org. Check out our producer Alex's other podcast, Fast Track.
Oh, fuck.
It goes by the name Howell Dottie. Did you just remember that you have to record some?
No, I remember that we recorded a hot new track.
Yeah,
that's going to be dropping soon.
Mm-hmm. Alex sent the guide track for this song that we're going to do.
Burning up your ears.
I love it already, and we haven't even done our parts yet, so I got to record that.
I got to record my part too, yeah.
But anyway, so check him out. Howell Dottie on Twitter, and thank you for listening. For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm
Elliot Galen.
Okay, Alex, make sure to drop in Bring Me to Life by Evanescence right now.
We don't have the rights.
Hemingway-esque is how I would describe that.
That was his classic six-word story. Baby shoes, for sale, baby shoes. You know how usually you put baby shoes on the feet of a baby? Well, this time they weren't on the feet of a baby. They actually haven't been on a baby's feet. They're as new. They're basically new. Mint condition. They haven't been on a baby's foot. We didn't have a baby. We planned to have a baby, and either we didn't have a baby or we had it and it died. You read into it. It was very sad.
Yeah. my intro was tight enough that even sicko Cormac McCarthy would applaud me.
Okay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.